Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Mike Jones. Jones is an award-winning bodybuilder who ran a successful male escort and massage therapist business for 25 years. In November of 2006, Jones revealed that the Reverend Ted Haggard, head of the New Life Church and the 30-million-strong National Evangelical Association, and a man who often preached hatred toward the gay community, had been coming to him for 3 years for gay sex. Needless to say, this revelation rocked the Christian world and turned many people's lives upside down, including Jones's own. This past June, Jones published his very personal memoir called I Had to Say Something, The Art of Ted Haggard's Fall, published by Seven Stories Press. I'm talking to Mike Jones by phone from his home in Denver, Colorado. Mike Jones, welcome to Out of Bounds. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, I know you got into bodybuilding at the age of 13 in response to your older brother's aggression, but how did you get into the escort service?
Yeah, well, when I was, I wasn't planning on getting into this business. Well, let me just start by saying this. I knew that I was attracted to men at a very early age, like around 5 years old. I didn't know what it meant, but I certainly knew I had an attraction. And as I got older, I, you know, learned what homosexual was and what gay was. And so when I was 18, you know, I wanted to go out and experience the world. So I got a fake ID, and I went into a gay bar, and I'm not quite sure what was going to happen or what it would be like. But to my amazement, I was hit on by an older gentleman who offered me money for sex. And I was just like, wow, you know, I would have given it away free. But okay, so I did that and not thinking much about it. But, you know, having $200 in my pocket that many years ago was quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed as I went out more and more, I was constantly getting propositioned for, you know, sex for money. And I learned what really happened was, and I wasn't aware of it at the time, was because I built up my body to defend myself from my older brother, that's what they were attracted to, was my physique.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were willing to pay for it. And I just thought, wow, I can make money at this. And so I did it for, you know, 20-some years, and not that it was always the full-time business, but I always did it because it was always cash in my pocket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I just kind of fell into it accidentally.
Yeah. Were there any other paths not taken, perhaps? Did you ever think about going to college? Because you sound like a very smart guy.
Oh, thank you. You know what? I tried.
Really?
Yeah. And but I've also done other things. I mean, I owned a bar. At one time, I owned a greeting card shop,
mm-hmm.
And I owned a little private gym. So I've done other things, certainly, but do I have a degree? I don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk to you about this man who came to you in 2003, who called himself Art from Kansas City,
correct.
And you eventually figured out this was Ted Haggard. Tell us about your first meeting with him.
Well, I wish I could say it was unusual, but it really wasn't. It was a typical phone call, and it was a phone call where on my caller ID, the call was blocked. And that's very common, especially with married men. They want absolutely no trace of anything they can think of when they go visit someone like me. And I can still remember that first time he came, and I thought, you know, what a decent-looking man, and he was clean, and he was nice. He didn't talk a whole lot. The only thing that really stood out was he wanted the room basically dark. He wanted everything, you know, all the lights off, all the candles blown out except one little tea light candle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the pattern was. He wanted basically to be together in the dark. And so it now makes sense. I mean, this man was going through a lot of guilt and shame of coming to see me, but he did it for 3 years, so he... You know, regardless of how he was feeling inside, it wasn't enough to keep him away from me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you get a sense that this man was doing this for the first time, or he'd been quite experienced in this?
I don't know if he was experienced, but I really think I had... My best assumption was he had been to someone before. Yeah, even though I don't think he was super new at it, I'm pretty sure that he had been to someone before. He wasn't that naive. Yeah.
Mm. Wow, that's interesting. Now, after a year, he started talking to you about meth.
Yes.
Tell us about that as well.
Well, on one of the visits, about a year after he had been seeing me, he asked me the question, what do you know about meth? And I told him, well, personally, I don't care for it. And I've tried it. I've never denied that, but I don't care for it. But I do have friends that do it. And so he kind of asked me more like, what do they like about it? And I said, well, they seem to think it enhances their sexual experience. So then he asked me if I could get him some. And what turned out to be was I hooked him up with someone. And so my involvement with the drug part was hooking him up with someone that provided it to him. And so every time he came to visit me after that, he had some with him.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, you also mentioned in your book how very sad so many of the men were who came to you. Did you feel this way about this Art Ted Haggard character?
Sure. I am. I was pretty good about reading faces. And especially when it was time to go, I could see, sadness in his eyes, in his face. A lot of the men that came to me, remember, 80% of my clientele over 20 years were married. Mm. And 15%, I say, were clergy. It was a huge amount. And so here's these men coming to me that I could tell they were kind of in situations where they felt trapped, where they were feeling guilt or shame, and they didn't know how to handle it. And so a lot of times, a lot of these men would cry in my arms.
Mm.
And so there's an analogy in my book that I use, and I call myself kind of like a combat nurse, because these men would come in, and they would seem like they're so depressed, and their self-esteem is so low, and they're not sure where to go. And I felt like I would mend them up and send them back out the battle.
Oh,
that's kind of how I felt, because, like Ted Haggard, these men have never been able to be honest or be who they really are. And in a way, then they have to live a lie, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they live two lives.
Isn't that interesting in this day and age when so many people are out of the closet and so much more acceptance of gay and lesbian people, that so many people still have to stay in the closet?
Some people still think of it as a taboo. And it's such a shame because it really should be a non-issue, especially today, but it isn't. It's still out there, and we still got to fight to overcome that. My best guess, because I'm 50, I've been around a while, and I've seen the progress that's been made. And I would say in about 10 years, I think it will truly be almost a non-issue. Because I think almost everyone is going to know someone, whether it's a family member or a friend, who is gay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you went through a really stressful time in 2006 when your mother died.
Yeah.
And it was also around that time that you discovered that Art was really Ted Haggard, this client that you'd been seeing for 3 years. Tell us how you discovered this.
Yeah, my mother passed on in January, and she was my best friend, and it was a horrible death, and I was very emotionally, depressed because of that. And then in April, so a few months later, I happened to be watching the History Channel, and there was a show on the Antichrist, and all of a sudden, there's Art. And I'm going, whoa, I wonder why he's on this show, why he's an expert. And They flashed his name so quickly on the screen, I didn't catch it. And ironically enough, that's why it was meant to be that I found out who this man was. The very, very next morning at 5 o'clock in the morning at the gym, I was on the treadmill, and there's like 12 TV monitors set up to watch, and none of them are ever, ever on the religious channel. But lo and behold, someone from the night before had turned one of them over to the religious channel, and I happened to be in front of that one, and there he was again. And this time, his name stayed up there, so I was able to write it down. And I had heard the name before, but it didn't click. And so when I went home, I got on the computer just to see, and I pulled his name up, and, 45 pages popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing research on some of the things he'd been saying and quotes, and needless to say, I was not happy with what I was reading.
You must have been shocked.
I was shocked. I was mad. I was confused. So many emotions came over me at that moment when I was really finding out who this man was. And truly, truly the ultimate word, of course, is what a hypocrite this man was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How did you react when he came to you the next time?
It was tough. I did see him 4 additional times when I knew who he was. I did not know what I wanted to do with this information. And people need to understand, again, I didn't consult with anybody about what I knew. And so I was really struggling with what do I do with this. And in fact, one of the things I did, I put this big piece of paper on the wall, and I wrote questions to myself like, Do I tell him I know who he is? Do I call the police? Do I call the church? Do I call his wife? I mean, I didn't know, and I was asking these questions to myself. But we had a vote coming up in Colorado on amending the Constitution for gay marriage, for marriage. And he was the biggest leader fighting to have this amendment passed to clarify in the Constitution. And so he had this big banner on his church, you know, against gay marriage and all this stuff. And I was going, my God, here's a man who can't even abide by his own marriage vows. And he's telling me that I can't get married to a person I want.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me the wrong way. And that's when I ultimately decided that I need to expose this man, because this is so wrong. And he's influencing so many people that it was just overwhelming to me. That's why I simply had to say something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been with many famous men, politicians, football
yeah.
players and stuff, and you say you would never, you follow the code of silence, that you'd never out any of these other people. But they're hurting people as well, don't you think, in some ways? I mean, their wives and stuff. But...
Well, of course, but mm-hmm. you know what? We all have issues, and we all have to take personal responsibility. If I heard them publicly speaking out against homosexuals or in some aspect of that, you bet I'd say something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not my practice just to out people, just to out them. If they're having issues at home, you know, I kept myself separate from that. They called me. I didn't call them. So that's just the business I was in. I didn't interfere on that. Did I necessarily agree with it? No.
Mm-hmm.
But I was providing the service.
Yeah.
And I was providing not just sex, I was providing comfort for these men. They had nowhere else to turn to. So I could have ruined a lot of careers along the years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I was into. This Ted Haggard situation was just very unique.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, he was one of the preachers who called gay parades murderers' pride day and stuff like that.
Yeah. It was great. And I was watching some of his videos, and he's telling people how to have, you know, perfect marriages. He said, it's so easy. All you have to do is love your wife and be faithful and love your kids. He's saying it, and he's telling people, he's teaching people this stuff, and he's seeing me at the same time. That is so wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will tell you also, you know, I went down to the church in January because I thought if I was going to write about it, I wanted to see it firsthand. So I went down there, and it was a very interesting experience, very friendly experience. You would have thought I was Moses when I walked in. It was kind of interesting how all the heads turned and the water split for me. But it was quite the experience. But there's a new pastor coming in. They've just picked a new one after all these months. And I'm trying to meet with him. I'm trying to get a dialogue started. But I will say this. If they're going to continue on the path that they're continuing and are going to really preach hate again, one of the things that happened when I went down there was I saw other people that had been to me.
Really?
Yes. Now, I've kept my mouth shut. In fact, one of them begged me to keep my mouth shut, and I said I would. But if they don't really talk with me and at least get a dialogue going, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know if I really want to go through all this again, but I could. I could certainly cause more aggravation down at the church, and that's not what I'm into. But you know what? Do they learn nothing from all of this? They have to understand that they can't continue on this binge of creating hate and telling me I'm going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't continue. So I think they better be a little bit careful with what they do, because I'm not going to go away. And I don't want to be like this pain in the butt person, but I could be if I wanted to. So I just hope that something is learned from all of this and there's a dialogue that gets started, and I hope to be someone that can help start that dialogue, but the ball is truly in their court.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Mike Jones. He's the gay escort who revealed that the Reverend Ted Haggard, head of the New Life Church, had been coming to him for 3 years for gay sex. He recently published a memoir called I Had to Say Something. Now, Mike, I want to ask you this. I really need to ask you this, because you talk about Haggard and his politics and his philosophy and his hate. And you revealed to Deborah Solomon in the New York Times magazine last June that you, in fact, voted for Bush in the 2004 election. Now, how do you reconcile that? It's an obviously anti-gay party and an anti-gay president. So,
well,
tell us.
Yes. And please remember, everything is in a moment of time. And I'm an independent thinker.
Mm-hmm.
So let me say, this is why I voted for Bush when I did. I wasn't voting because it was a Republican or Democrat. The terrorist threat bothered me so much, that I thought, what the hell am I going to fight for gay rights for if we're being blown up? It seemed almost second nature.
Mm.
And at the moment in time, I could not stand Kerry. Kerry, to me, offered me nothing. So the terrorist threat was very heavily on my mind. That's why I voted for Bush. Now, let me say this. I think he's been a horrible president. I feel like he lied, and I'm sorry that I did.
Mm.
But people have to understand it was that moment in time, and that's how I felt. Now, I did not expose Ted Haggard because he was a Republican or Democrat. I exposed him because he was a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not one of those people that sometimes I think, because if more people would get involved, maybe with even the Republican Party, maybe they can have more influence. But everybody seems to just vote party tickets, and I'm not always that way.
Mm-hmm.
So people can hate me because I voted for Bush back then. Do I feel like it was a mistake? I admit it. I'm not ashamed to say I wish I wouldn't have voted for him. But at that moment in time, I did what I thought was best.
I understand. Now, I want you to talk to us a little bit about how you did break this story. What some of the hoops you had to go through to get this story out.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, there's this one, it's the leading television station in Colorado, Channel 9 News, and there's a reporter down there who I've always admired, and she's been there for like 25 years, and I always told myself, my God, if I ever need a reporter, I would go to her. Well, lo and behold, I needed a reporter. So I went to Paula Woodward, and I met with her, and right off the bat, I could tell she believed me. And so she went and got the big wigs, and they came in, and they liked everything I had. However, they were a little skittish about it, because especially with the evangelical church, this is a big group of people they did not want to offend.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically they sat on the story for 2 months. And the election was coming up. And I'm like, I was getting really antsy and getting kind of mad at the same time. And I also went to a newspaper, and they also wanted the story. But I told them to kind of hold off because I wanted to see what the TV station was doing. And then it was getting just too much for me. So I went to a talk radio station that I listened to all the time, and I emailed them. I said, hey, you want a big story? I got one for you right now. And so the next day they had me on. And I did not mention Ted Haggard's name that first day, but when the TV station heard me on the radio, well, they weren't going to let them scoop him. And so they ran down there and confronted Ted Haggard, like, you know, ASAP. So it was really agonizing to me that nothing was happening. But let me just tell you, if I would have taken the initiative to really push it again, they would probably still be sitting out there. But once I did, it hit hard and it hit fast.
Yeah, I noticed that.
My head was spinning, let me tell you.
I'll bet you. Yeah. What kind of incriminating materials had you gathered about him? I imagine you were at first afraid people weren't going to believe you.
Of course. I had voicemails.
Mm.
And the voicemails it was him. And they even did a voice expert, you know, come in to match the words, and it was him. And I also had an envelope that he had sent me in the mail from Colorado Springs. I had that. And listen, I could have had so much more evidence if I had wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do with it. And people have to also understand, I could have blackmailed Ted Haggard. I could be sitting with a lot of money in the bank right now, my private life intact. I chose not to go that route. I felt like people may have looked at me as a very immoral person when I was doing. That's fine. But I felt at that moment in time, I had a moral decision to make. And so I did.
Mm-hmm. And when you outed Haggard, you also outed yourself, I understand, because most of your friends didn't know that you were in the escort service.
Yeah,
How did that pan out?
Yeah, it is true. When I exposed Ted Haggard, I exposed myself, and I lost all my massage clients. I lost my personal training clients. I got fired from the art schools. I had death threats. I had the police knocking on my door. So I had a lot going on, and I had nobody really to turn to. I reached out to some gay groups, and nobody called me back. And I was terrified, and I was scared, and I actually was crying. I'm going, oh, my God. And so, yeah, none of my friends knew. I never told them I was going to expose this man or was doing this, so they heard about it like everybody else on the news. It was a very terrifying, lonely experience.
Mm.
because I consulted no one. I made a decision myself, but I had no idea the twists and turns the story was going to do. I truly thought Ted Haggard was going to do like a Jimmy Swaggart, admit it, apologize, ask for forgiveness, and move on. I had no idea he was going to deny and then lie and try to wiggle out of it.
But he was only able to deny it for a while. He obviously lost his ministry
Everything happened within a week. He resigned from the, he was president of the 30 million association of, you know, evangelicals. And then he had to leave his church. And my God, he's had to leave Colorado. But let me say this, Ted Haggard will be back.
You think so?
He signed a one-year agreement with the church that he would not talk about the scandal, and he'd leave Colorado for the year. Well, wait till after January. I have a feeling we'll be hearing from him.
And did revealing this story and becoming so public help you in your personal life? Are you able to have closer friends now who actually know what you're doing and that
well,
you can be open with?
I don't do escorting anymore.
No, I know you don't.
Yeah. You know, I'm a loner by nature. I always have been. So it's kind of weird. As much as my life has changed, it's still the same. I'm still by myself. I'm just trying to struggle and get by. I don't really have a job. I've been doing this book tour, so I've been doing a lot of traveling. And slowly but surely, some groups are honoring me now. Like I got the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Harvey Milk Foundation.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. And I'm speaking at different events now. People are finally coming around, but what's really been interesting is all the book tours I've been on, and people come up and go, oh, my God, Mike, you've probably been at so many gay pride parades and events. I go, not one. Nobody's invited me. So it's, I think I overestimated the support I'd get from the gay community. I was shocked that so many people have turned their back on me. In fact, the only time I've been yelled at in public, the only time I've been spit at in public, the only time I've been called names in public, has been by the gay community.
Why do you think that is? Do you think there's still a real prejudice against what you were doing?
Yeah.
And not just that you outed Haggard.
No. See, that's the problem is they're looking, and this is so sad. It's like these people have no room to talk. Okay? The same people that say I'm disgusting are the same people that I've used escorts before. Yeah, they're concentrating too much on that. I can tell you a big part is jealousy. They're jealous that I'm in the limelight. I mean, they just don't get it. Listen, this has not been easy. They concentrate too much on that aspect and not concentrate on what I did. I brought down one of the leading opponents in this country of gay marriage. This guy talked to President Bush once a week. It affected the national election. But some people call me a hero and some people call me a scumbag. I decided I can't please everyone. That's
the
bottom line.
And you know, that's what happens when anybody gets in the limelight, no matter what they're doing. I also heard that you were named by The Advocate as one of the people of the year.
That was nice, yeah. And I'm currently in a play in Boulder, Colorado. It's a really neat story. It's called the Boulder Fringe Festival, and this writer of this play had already written this play about Iraq and gays in the military and stuff, and he read my book. And he was so moved by it that he actually wrote this character into the play that's based on my emotions. And I'm very excited about it. So I'm in rehearsals for that now, and I'm really enjoying it.
Now, what made you decide to write this book? Did somebody come to you, or was this out of your own ideas?
No, the publisher, you know, I had an agent in New York. I just said, well, you know, if anything comes up, I just need someone just in case. Well, this came up like boom. And within a half an hour, I got confirmation that they wanted to go through with it. There's a few reasons why I wrote this book. Number one, if you really look at what Haggard said, he said he only met me one time. Okay, I have a story to tell. This man saw me for 3 years, so I needed to tell that story. I needed people to learn that Mike Jones was not a whore, that Mike Jones was a real person that had feelings and emotions, that he actually helped a lot of people. And ultimately, though, I want people to understand is Ted Haggard is just the tip of the iceberg. There are so many men like Ted Haggard. And if we don't talk about it and we don't deal with it now, there's going to be so many more of them down the line. And that's a shame.
Now, do you have any regrets?
Sometimes. I have to be honest. Sometimes when people have come down really nasty on me, I sometimes go, is this all worth it? I mean, my God, I've ruined my life, and, you know, Ted Haggard has since ruined his own life. I don't want to feel guilty about that, but sometimes if someone came to me today with the same situation, I think what I would say is, if you want money, blackmail them. If you want to make a point in life, do it anonymously if you can.
Really?
Yeah, because I just don't think it's been worth it, to be honest with you.
Really? This really has disrupted your life so much.
Well, I discovered how hateful people are, how judgmental they are. I stuck my neck out, and to be called the things that I've been called, and to have so much hate thrown at me, has really been disappointing and hurtful to me. And the problem is if you're going to treat me that way, you kind of discourage anybody else in the future from going out of the box and stepping forward. And that's the shame. That's the bad part about it, I think.
Well, Mike Jones, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we do wish you well for the future. And thank you for what you've done.
I appreciate that so much. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by Finger Lakes Arts Grants and Services. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.